Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Letting Go of Analog, and it's about the intersection of music and technology. Our guest for this episode is someone who knows a little something about this intersection of music and technology, Mr. Todd Keebs. Say something for yourself, Mr. Keebs. Who you are, what you do, and why I picked... No, just talk. You talk now. Me drink beer.
Well, I'm a Pittsburgh native. I grew up here, and I went to school down in Miami. Had thoroughly enough of Miami in the 4 years that I was there, and then decided to come back. Work for an audio startup microphone company here in Pittsburgh. And I've been a DJ slash producer for the last... How old am I? 32, so 16 years or so.
Wow.
Or half my life, actually.
Wow, that is official. Yeah, the math on that is correct. And so you have your hand in a lot of different things. Okay, first, there's how I kind of know you from the Triggers guys. You're in a band called Chrome Baby Jesus, right?
Yep.
There's also the Laser Crunk Pizza Party, which you talk to us about that?
It's not always a pizza party.
Unfortunately.
That was our theme for the 1 month. But...
Oh, you see, I fat guy, I was thinking pizza all the time. Okay, but...
No, but it's a party called Laser Crunk. We've been doing it for 5 years now.
Wow.
Goes on a Brillo box once a month. The kind of general idea is forward-thinking bass music. Kind of, there's this new realm of music that sort of constantly changes genre, and people always try and pigeonhole with the names and whatnot, but ultimately it's all about being fun dance music that's has a lot of bass.
Cool. And that is the second Friday of every month now at Brillo Box?
Yeah, we just moved to second Fridays. So.
Moved to second Fridays, and you have another regular gig, right?
Yeah, well, this one's not so much a gig. It's more of a collective. It's we do a weekly event at the Bloomfield Bridge Tavern called Fuzz, and it's been going on for 12, maybe 13. I think this will be 13 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's one of the longest-running drum and bass nights in the country, and it's kind of a constantly revolving cast of characters, about 12 people or so, that all help DJ or throw the event or, you know, work the door, things like that. And it goes on every week. And it's a small local thing at Pittsburgh's only Polish party house.
Cool. And it's every Wednesday.
Yep, every
Wednesday. Every single Wednesday.
Every Wednesday.
Fuzz.
Yep.
Happens at the Bloomfield Bridge Tavern. Yeah. Laser Crunk. Second Fridays at Brillo Box, and now also Chrome Baby Jesus.
Yep.
So you really are an electronic musician, an electronic artist. So what made you make that choice? Did you like try to learn how to play like a real instrument and then you failed at it? Like, how does that work?
No, I started playing cello when I was in fifth grade.
Okay.
Actually, it was quarter cello.
Oh.
Because you don't get a full cello at that point because you're too small.
Yeah, you're fifth grade,
you get a quarter cello. And then and I only chose that because I just kind of assumed that the trombone, that would be all gone because I assumed everybody would want those by the time I got to pick.
Yeah.
Then when I found out I was wrong about that, I switched to trombone.
Okay. So was it then just years of tromboner jokes, basically?
Nonstop. And spit valve jokes.
That's right. There is no spit valve, I guess, with drum and bass. I mean,
you might be able to make some analogies there. But
Well, it is true. But I mean, I think that one of the big things I want to talk about, or I find curious and so interesting, fascinating about this thing that's happening, as it's been happening in my lifetime, I guess, you know. And again, I come to this, full disclosure, I always was a rock guy, you know, I was gonna have guitars, you know. And then, like, at some point in my mid-20s, I got bored, and I just realized, there's this whole other world of fascinating, amazing things. I'm not fully living. It's like Canada, you know. Like, we got sports teams there, I've been there a couple of times, but I'm still, like... still not ready for the queen to be on the money, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's still, a little bit somewhat other to me. But I find it fascinating, this idea, you know, there's, I think I said this to you in an email, there's that Dead Can Dance CD, and yeah, the granted they could be a little pretentious, but I still love them, called Spirit Chaser, and it's their mm-hmm. record of Native American music. And there's this whole thing in the liner notes about, you think about the ancient ways, you know, of like making a drum, it involved the death of an animal. It was involved the death of a living thing. I mean, think even a guitar, man, because we play guitars. That was once a living thing that then sort of vibrates. And so their whole thing was, there's this spiritual quality of music because you have to bring something that's dead back to life. And you think about how, for human beings up until, you know, what, maybe the theremin, the Moog, you know, the Ohms Martineau, it was this, like, very real, like, living, sculpted thing made music. Till now, you know, it's silicon, it's a machine, it's, you know, people can do stuff on, right, an Apple, like, just MacBook.
Sure.
Is the thing. And how that's maybe, is that a different era, different idea, different way of relating to music and the act of making music?
It's definitely a different way of making music. Ultimately, though, I mean, in my mind, it's all getting to the same end purpose, you know, which is vibrations going into your ears, something that's non-speech that gives you pleasure for who knows what exact reason, but something that's kind of core to yourself, right? And so if it's made by something that was living, or if it's made by something that was mined from the ground and, you know, pressed into small capacitors and resistors and placed on a circuit board and thrown together with a hard drive, ultimately, you know, the method of making it matters less in my mind than what comes out in the end.
Yeah, that's true. That's a great way of thinking about it. I think, too, I mean, that idea you were saying about that thing that we don't know what it is. Yeah, you know, Jacques Attali, a French economist, wrote this amazing book called Noise, The Political Economy of Music. And it's like, okay, it's an economist talking about music. And he talks about, you know, again, you know, back the ancient ways, or really even in the medieval times, you know, the priests, even the Catholic priests were the only ones who had access to making music. Because it was this idea that you were somehow maybe channeling the other side, or it was this kind of liminal event that it existed between the sphere of the natural and the supernatural. Which, when you think about, you know, I've been to Lasercrunk yet, but when I've seen, like, the pictures you posted at the pizza party, you know, and just the idea of there being, you know, sort of ambience and there's lights and whatever, that is that also, it is like chasing that maybe experience that's outside of you.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And that's, you know, I mean, that goes back to kind of, I think, what has driven rave culture. I mean, fortunately and unfortunately, which is, you know, drug use.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that I think the kind of the end goal is all to, you know, whether or not it's through drugs or it's through music or through the combination of both, but like the kind of push towards not being in reality, you know, being creating this repetition, almost meditation, right, in your mind, that, and, you know, obviously electronic music is very repetitive. Well, a lot of it is.
Yeah.
Dance music is very repetitive. And as a result, you know, you kind of reach this out of your mind, otherworldly state, you know?
Yeah. And which, I guess then the question is, as a DJ and performer, I mean, I can make the Pied Piper analogy, but this idea that you think, you know, you do something and you get to see people react to it. And it is wholly yours. You know, I had Adam from Chrome Baby Jesus and Triggers on the last episode, actually. You know, they were saying about the whole dynamic of doing a band, and, you know, and it's how you work with those other people, and you got to trust other people. But as a DJ, it's all you, isn't it? It's if you want to put that beat into people and you want to maybe spur that reaction. I mean, do you feel like sometimes you are, like, I don't know, the wizard behind the curtain, or the Pied Piper, or the High Priest or something, that you can see people kind of maybe lose their shit a little bit, or get taken to a different place and know, yeah, I'm doing that. Is that a weird thing to kind of
experience? It is. And it's, I think that's sort of one of the big, you know, appeals to DJing.
Mm.
And that's both sort of from a good point and sort of from a bad, in that ultimately a lot of DJs are playing other people's music.
Yeah. Right?
Which is, I mean, most, the far majority of what I play is other people's music. So there's always, although you are, you know, you're doing this, I think it's very easy for DJs to get lost in that sense, that almost like addictive sense of, I'm playing this for everybody, and, you know, everybody's going crazy for it, and it's mm-hmm. and it's great. I mean, it's an amazing feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that I feel like some other people don't get any entire sense of, and what I didn't before I started DJing, when I was just going out to raves and everything else, is that the role of the DJ is almost more of the composer and the arranger and the tastemaker than it is the actual creator. So, you know, which is it's something I think a lot of people don't fully realize. People see somebody up there, you know, moving the record back and forth, and they don't realize that person's just moving the record in order to start it at the right time, not to actually create the sound.
Yeah.
Which is part of what I try and push past in the stuff that I do, but it's, you know, it's not easy with electronic music because it's so hyper produced and
Which I think is that then people who do realize, and again, I think some of it is there's just always this anxiety when there is something new. You know, when there's something new happening, that I think also then people do, like, well, you're just playing somebody else's records.
Right.
You know, and they don't see that there's an art or a dexterity to it.
Right.
So I wonder if you talk to a little bit and kind of maybe demystify the process of what does it mean to say, I'm going to put this with this, and I'm going to do this together and make it this, and this will have an effect on people.
Right.
Like, what's that process like?
Well, I mean, it's hard to answer that for as a general question.
Okay.
Because, I think that's why it's a good question.
Okay.
Is because for, you know, the process as far as being a DJ is, I think, very different for pretty much everybody. And some people, you know, I mean, you'll have some DJs who will show up with their computer with, you know, Windows Media Player, and maybe they'll have an iPod, and they'll press play, and, you know, I've been to a lot of parties where that happens and people go crazy, right? I mean, people really enjoy it, and, you know, they're essentially, all they're doing is pressing play and choosing songs, but everybody likes it, so ultimately it's hard to, you know, hard to poo-poo on it too much, because, you know, people are having fun, and that's what they're doing. But then you have other people who will, you know, plan everything out and tag their music with various genre names so that they can, you know, go through it all and create the exact right flow and have everything, you know, really carefully selected out beforehand, or do a lot of stuff live and do more live performance kind of aspects of DJing. So I guess ultimately it's a hard question, because people can sometimes do very little and have it seem like they're doing a whole lot.
Yeah.
Or the opposite way around. People can be doing a whole ton, and people can just might see them sitting behind a laptop, you know, pressing a few keys and think, oh, they're just up there, you know, checking their email or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Which is a weird thing. And I think that's an anxiety, I think, for all creative people. I think, is this, some people work really hard and they struggle and they sweat over something and they try and they put their life into something and they make this thing that's all this effort, and ultimately there is this cheap, shitty version that people just, oh my god, Hootie and the Blowfish, or whatever, you know, oh my god, he's a country singer now, you know. I mean, the extreme example, I will say, when I went to St. Francis University in the late 90s, which, I mean, St. Francis is very rural, and very isolated, I think, both geographically and, unfortunately, for some folks who went there, a lot of folks who went there, maybe the mainstream of folks who went there, isolated sort of mentally. And so I was involved in the radio station. Yeah, so we'd have these, you know, dance parties. And finally, the guy who was in charge of the station at the time realized that everybody just, they, you know, every night you had to play "Come On Ride It," train, choo choo, ride it, that song, and people would lose their shit and go nuts and would get pissed if you tried anything else. Uh-huh. So, like, right. You know, so you think in the late 90s, like, Aphex Twin was happening. You put that on, people are like, what is this, man? What the fuck? You know, or Autochair, or any of those, like, kind of cool, or Tosca, or any of those things that, like, people were doing that was a little different.
Right.
That had beats in it. Oh, what the fuck, man? You know, and it was just like, you know, and you'd have this, like, you know, 250-pound ripped frat. What are you doing, man? Come on, do the choo-choo song. And so...
But that's a good song.
It works. But every fucking Saturday night at 10:45, it had to happen, or, you know what I mean? It had to happen or else.
Yeah.
And if you gave anybody anything else. And so what the guy did was he just made a tape. He didn't even use the good cassette. He used the type one, like, shitty, you know, that you're supposed to use for, like, recording class notes or something. Like, you wouldn't put music on this cassette. And he just made, you know, he got the 120-minute version.
Right.
You know, 60 minutes side A, 60 minutes side B. The last song was always that Don't Stop Believing by Journey. That was, again, another one. That was the dance
last
is over.
Song they played on Sopranos.
Yes, it had to be the last. I guess maybe we were ahead of the curve.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Apparently.
But that song was the last song. And if it wasn't, then people didn't know it was time to go home. You know? But that's all he did. He made a tape. And I think he made two tapes. And he put all the same music on both tapes. He just maybe just put the order a little different. And that was it. And wow. People loved that. And I think that was used for like a couple years. And nobody complained. And again, I tried to, let's do a battle of the DJs.
Right.
Let's do a thing where it's a two-hour dance, first dance hour, this person gets it, second dance. And at the end, you know, and we'll do a bracket and people will be into it. And people hated it. People hated those people, those DJs, for doing any sort of variation on the theme. And so it was like the worst example of that, I think, is, oh no, but I got this cassette I made.
No, I mean, and this also, you know, it kind of goes back to what I was saying before about, you know, electronic music, dance music being very repetitive, which is that people, you know, I think your mind is sort of naturally wired to, like, familiarity.
Mm-hmm.
And in dance music, you need to be, if you were just familiar with it for the last 30 seconds, that's enough, you know. But then with stuff like you're saying, you know, like 80s Night at the Upstage, where, I mean, Easy Lou, you know, he's did his thing for a long time, and I give a lot of respect to the guy, but, you know, he would do the same mixes, you know, every week, like, just like you're saying, and he would, you know, end the night with similar songs every time, and people knew, you know, okay, this song's coming up, that means this is going to happen next. And there's something about that comfortableness that, and again, especially when intoxicated. And when I said drugs before, I also mean, I don't mean just drugs, like,
yeah, ecstasy,
alcohol.
Yeah, but alcohol,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, which is the most common, and, you know, does this essentially serve the same purpose as everything else. So, yeah. I mean, you get people that are inebriated and play some stuff that they know, and they smile goes on your face, and, you know, having a good time, and, you know, but there's... Also, I mean, although that's a lot of people, there's also the people that, you know, like new sounds, right? And
mm-hmm.
Which is...
The people who explore, the people, yeah.
Right. Which is, I mean, with Laserkrunk, which is, you know, kind of the main effort that I have as far as musically, you know, we kind of try and do both of those. We try and play a bit of stuff that people might know and people might have heard, but also dig more into the... slightly deeper sounds at times when it's appropriate, and, you know, when the party's at full strength, then, yeah, you throw in the songs that people know and people like, and then everybody has a good time. but you also need to balance that out with the other side of things, because
so obviously then there is a dexterity to it, you know. And I think about God, am I gonna pick on my mother right now? Yes, I am. I'm gonna pick on my mother. So my mother calls me this week and says that she bought an iPad, which, all right, great. My mother has this from QVC. Okay, so she'll sit at home. This thing will be on TV. They'll talk about it for 20 minutes, and before you know it, my mom is there, landline, you know, receiver in hand, punching in the credit card number, you know, and saying, and so she bought it. And so I started explaining to her, okay, well, with an iPad, then you're going to need to sync it to get it started. So you're going to need to go on the computer that you don't use anymore because it's too complicated, and download iTunes, and then sign up an iTunes account so that you can do this, so that you can then from your thing, your iPad, just download apps so that it actually works. And I realized about two-thirds of the way through this conversation that unless I go down there, my mom lives in a gated golf community in South Carolina now, it will sit in its box in a closet. And that is what will happen to this iPad. Right. Like, it will just, oh, that's lovely. And then she'll be tired of being on the kitchen counter and it'll go in a closet. And, like, just the dexterity and the skill that goes, like, because I'm sure... And I remember this from being a radio DJ, you know, the anxiety of dead air.
Oh, yeah, never one.
Is that like the word, when you have a room full of people having maybe the time of their lives or at least the time of that night?
Right. No, I mean, that's the goal of a DJ, and which is definitely been one of the interesting things about going, you know, starting to be in more of a quote unquote band than being a DJ, is that, you know, as a DJ, you always want there to be something flying, you know, and if there's no sound, something's wrong.
Yes.
You know, and I think part of that
everybody
is...
Everybody then just looks at you.
Right, yeah.
Right?
Like, so, what is the guy doing up there? Wait a second, who is he? But yeah, you know, I mean, you don't... And it kind of goes back to what you were saying before about creating this otherworldly, you know, out of your mind experience, right? You don't want people to come back to reality. You don't want people to start really thinking, wait, do I look like an idiot just standing here and moving around, you know?
Yeah.
You want there to be music, you want everybody to be moving, you want everybody to be having a good time, not thinking about that kind of stuff and just thinking about having fun and, you know.
Well, what is it? I think there was a classical composer or maybe an opera composer who said, you know, his goal was, or his job, the composer's job was to keep people from coughing. and that was in the concert hall.
Edwin von Ludens?
Edwin von Ludens, yeah. Maybe that was it. That if people had time to get back into their body and go, you knew that was a boring part. And I wonder, I guess maybe is it for the DJ, is it the glow of the cell phone? Or checking the watch, or like, oh, let me just see who just texted me or whatever.
Yeah.
Is that the sign of, oh, fuck, you know,
yeah,
it's gone wrong.
That's definitely part of it. I mean, I recently opened up for Pete Wentz, who's the lead singer of Fall Out Boy.
Oh, okay.
He did a DJ set after his Fall Out Boy thing, and all the people that were there to see him, and, you know, I was just the person that was taking up their time before he went on.
Oh,
and,
that's brutal, yeah.
And, you know, so I kind of intentionally threw some little bit more heady stuff in that I didn't think they were going to necessarily like, but, you know, whatever. But, I mean, I've never seen a more bored group of people than my life. They're sitting out, and usually people, you know, if they're on their cell phones, will be at the back of the club. They'll be at the bar, you know, either talking with their friends or on their cell phone or whatever. But these kids were right up front, right in your face.
Oh, no.
And sitting there on their phones, like leaning over, you know, the barricade as if, you know, somebody was going to steal their spot in a second.
Oh, that's brutal.
While also being bored. And there are probably about 100 of them doing that.
Oh.
So there were a few that were really into it. And so that's ultimately kind of what it's about, you know.
See, that was me. Again, maybe because I'm the devil or I just have issues. But do you know the Japanese noise artist Merzbo?
No.
Okay, the first time I heard Merzbo, it was a moment that changed my life because I almost passed out. the sound that he creates, the sound, he doesn't call it music, he truly calls it noise.
Yeah.
He has all of these that he wires up himself, solders together, sound generating devices to make just noise. And his CDs are mastered louder than anything I'd ever heard. And it was February, and we're in Pittsburgh, for those of you who don't know. It was February. There was snow on the ground. I think it was snowing outside. And I was like, I'm going to let the dog out. Like, I got about 30 seconds to a minute and a half in. I was like, I need to let the dog out. And to keep my, because I was getting the tunnel vision, to keep myself from passing out, I grabbed hunks of snow. And was I didn't even put a coat on. I was just grinding the snow into my arms just to have some sensation to be like, no, don't pass out. Don't pass out. And I came back in and my buddy had already taken the CD out of the player. And he was like, I'm sorry about that. So I was like, no, man, that was amazing. I didn't know that sound could have that effect on me. And I will play it for people if people want to hear it. And they're done 30 seconds in.
Right.
They're just done. And that's where I would go to those people. Like, I'd just be like, yeah, okay, get the freaking Japanese guy. You know, and it's just brutal and awful and just piercing. And That's what I would do to those people then.
Now, yeah.
Antagonize them. I will punish you. You don't want to leave from that spot? Well, you're going to have to fucking earn your Fallout Boy set, you know?
No, I mean,
but I'm an asshole. So
no,
I
definitely hear that side of things, though. Because, I mean, I have two of my best friends are more from the breakcore noise, you know, hardcore kind of electronic aspects of things, where, you know, it's all about just creating chaos. And I love that stuff as well.
Yeah.
But that's sort of the line you have to walk. Again, you have to kind of give people enough that it's a little bit different than what they're used to, so that they're intrigued. Maybe then they start to get, you know, bored by it, and then you bring them back with something else, you know? So yeah. It's like any argument, right? If you go into somebody and start yelling at them and screaming, yeah, you know, they're not going to listen to you.
You got to
try and talk them through it and get them more to where you want. And then at that point, then maybe you can see your side of things and, you know.
You just explained to me back in the archaic days of mixtapes, I think, I would start screaming. I would just you know, and then people would you listen to it yet? And they were like, yeah, you know, it's all right. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, but I spent like a whole like 2 hours pressing pause and changing CDs, man. And I wrote them all down for you, and I told you what you should think about. I would do that liner notes to my mixtape. This is what you should think about this right now, okay? You
know, which is sort dying.
Of yes, it's a sort of imperialism, I guess. Too, I guess you could. Yeah. So I guess what we're getting to is you could use your powers for good or for evil.
It's true. Yeah.
This is true.
You know, sometimes they're both good, and there's definitely certain people that, you know, prefer that other type, right? But it's like you got to kind of.
Read the room.
You know, right, yeah. Read the room, and you got to shoot for what you think is going to ultimately get people to where you want them to get to. And again, for some DJs, you know, that could be get everybody pissed off as hell.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that I definitely have friends that like to do that. But, wow. And the bartenders may not like it.
They probably get fewer tips. And
right, but, hey, if that's what your goal is, then... And do your thing.
Yeah, that's what people want. So can we talk about gear then? Because we talked a little bit about earlier on about this, you know, living thing versus, you know, we're recording this on a laptop right now, you know, kind of that thing about, you know, how about gear? I mean, because I know guitar people, and I was in to pick this microphone that we're recording on up. I had to go to a guitar center, and, you know, I do have this left-handed bass that I can't play at all, really. Not even very well, just not at all. It just doesn't happen. But I, you know, can with my fingers sometimes on and go dur, 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 or whatever, and I feel better for 5 minutes when I do that. But I just was like, oh, the gear. There's so many things that you can use, and everyone's slightly different somehow.
Yeah.
And what about gear? What about, like, the setup, the, you know... What goes into just, okay, I got to make all this sound now, you know, knowing, well, this is better than the, you know, type one cassette, you right. know, like, and how you feel about, like, this is the thing that allows me to be the Pied Piper.
Yeah, it's the priest. I mean, it's something that is drastically changing currently, and has changed a lot within the last, I'd say, 3 years. I mean, for the most, I mean, it used to be that every DJ used Technics 1200s, you know, and a DJ mixer of some sort. Mixer kind of didn't matter quite as much. Well, it was generally either you were you either used a quote unquote house and techno mixer, which is, or a battle mixer, which is like more like a two channel scratching mixer. It's pretty much the only two distinctions there used to be. But now, you know, as people are moving further and further away from analog and even turntables, now the options are really just exploding. I mean, well, first after turntables, it was CD decks, you know, CD turntables, and that was kind of the big thing. But now that there's a lot of other options, it really can be anywhere from a preset thing that that you can go and buy for, you know, $150 that will have, you know, some faders and some little jog dials, and you just plug into your computer and it does everything, to more customized setups where you can mix and match different components and map them out the way you want and do all that kind of stuff, which is what I prefer. Maybe because I kind of started doing it before they had these all-in-one controllers that were good.
Yeah.
But there's a... I mean, the advantage being the customization aspect of multiple different controllers, the downside being that it's a pain in the ass to do because you need to go into the program, you need to map out this fader turns this virtual fader up.
Oh,
you know, this knob turns this up. This button will change what this other knob does, and whenever this button is pressed, this other knob does something else.
Which I think then there is this... I have used this phrase before, and it's not really a word, obsessiness. That is sort of amazing that I think... Especially, maybe it is a male thing, maybe it's a masculine thing.
Yeah.
But just this idea of, well, since I can make this highly technical and highly complicated and highly intricate... I can and I should.
Right.
You know, and I know, again, I use Audacity for crying out loud, you know, which is, it's freeware, it works, it gives me all the computing power I need.
Sure.
But the first episode I ever did, Spiff, the one-man band, we were talking about cars, and he composed on his iPhone a song for me just using the ambient noise of his engine and his mouth. To make the sound that his state of mind as he's just driving along on the highway. Because this Spiff, he like lives in his car like 6 months out of the year. Like he tours 6 months out of the year as a one-man band actor. He's in bands, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just spends a lot of time just driving between cities. And so he tried to play it on his iPhone, and we're using the microphone that was just embedded in the laptop. And I couldn't hear it at all, so I had to do an overdub. And so he played it, and then we were talking on his phone. He was playing on the phone, and we were talking over it, and then you couldn't hear it. So I had to do just kind of a razor blade edit and just take the file that he gave me and put it in. And so he did that, and the file had a certain length. And we started talking, and I felt like we started talking about a second and a half too soon. Which on Audacity, you can, you know, expand the scope of the sound wave or whatever graphic representation. Right. So that second and a half is like your whole computer screen. And I was like, fuck, but I don't want to really cut the thing and then move it all back. And I just, screw it, I'm just going to do it. And it really bothered me. That second and a half. And I talked to people about it who listened to the episode. They're like, no, I didn't even know you overdubbed. I just thought that was the way it sounded. It sounded really good. I was like, you didn't think we started talking too soon? Because I could have fixed that. And they're like, no, I didn't really notice or think about that at all in any even remote way.
Right.
And here I am. You know, we did that in December. It's May. It's almost June. I'm still thinking about it and talking about it.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it's things like that, and it's attention to detail that even though somebody may not realize they noticed, they did. And... Yeah, I think that's kind of a lot of what goes into the DJing as well, is that the ultimate goal for a lot of people is so that nobody knows, really can't hear what you're doing. So it's like,
so it's invisibility,
right? And I mean, you know, again, the ultimate goal is to kind of, you transition from one song into the other with everybody thinking that that's the way it was written to begin with, and that's that nothing was actually done and nobody even notices. And the reason for that is kind of continuity, so people dance and people just keep going and don't start thinking.
don't get back in themselves.
But so people, I mean, even if somebody listens to it, goes back and listens to it over and over and over again, if they don't, they may not know that that happened, but if it had happened, they might have thought something differently.
Oh, wow.
So it's almost the what they don't know that can hurt them kind of thing, or
that's
something
true.
Like that.
I learned a phrase this week. I'm reading a book, or I'm starting to do research into into security culture, and the idea of security culture, surveillance culture, and how it's reshaping public life. And I heard this phrase that the book is called Against Security, but it's citing somebody else, and I wasn't a good student. I wasn't a good professor. Who originally said this, or you people out there can Google it. The technology of enchantment. The technology of enchantment, meaning that absolute perfect blend of technology and aesthetics and of human needs, so that things seem seamless and perfect and maybe an extension of yourself.
Right. And that's an interesting... has an interesting relation to kind of constant arguments that go on within DJ culture, which is there's some people who prefer things to be not perfect, not polished. People that, the way I DJ, I have everything synced up and everything is, the beats are going to be in correct time with each other.
Wow.
All the time. But some people don't like that. Some people prefer, and whether or not they truly prefer it or they're being stubborn is probably a little bit up for debate, but some people prefer things to be a little bit off, to things to be a little more, quote-unquote analog or natural.
Natural, or, yeah. And I got to bring this up, because I did not eavesdrop, I did not cyberstalk, but I saw on your face place, you had made a comment, or you had a status update about if a DJ set is advertised as 100% vinyl, your interest goes to zero. And I think at one point I looked at it and there was like 150 comments. Like, I've never, I think, like, my dog dying got 70 comments, I was like, my dog died. And people were like, but 150 comments about, people shouldn't just play records, like, damn, And I guess that the part of it, this letting analog go thing is maybe, is that where your technology of enchantment comes from?
I think so. I mean, ultimately, like I said before, I think that it doesn't matter so much how you're doing it as opposed to what you're doing. And I think what a lot of people get caught up on is the how you're doing it aspect of it. And if you're doing it one way, it's right, or if you're doing it another way, it's wrong. And, or not necessarily right or wrong, but better or worse.
Yeah.
And I think the kind of easy thing to see in those kind of arguments is analog versus digital, vinyl versus computers, or things like that. It's definitely, a hotbed issue among DJs, because it's just... one side's pushing forward and the other side's kind of saying, no, we want to keep this thing that we had before, and both are cool, but ultimately it should be about the enchantment aspect of it, not necessarily how you're getting there.
Oh, okay. So it's like Gulliver's Travels, the Lilliputian argument, how you cut your egg open.
Right.
It becomes that as opposed to,
how good is the egg?
How good is the egg? But we already talked about that earlier, that whole, but then, people sometimes just like crap.
That's true as well. Then there's that factor, which just kind of throws things into it.
So what is DJ Hell then? I think if we talked about the technology of enchantment, because the way that in the book I was reading, Against Security, talks about the opposite, is that a way that people, when they become immediately frustrated and they start banging things? You know what I mean? Like, if something doesn't work, people, like, smack it.
Right.
You know, we had an old TV that was like that, but it actually helped the TV. Or I once, she passed away. Am I going to badmouth the dead? But okay, there was this woman I went to grad school with, and yeah, unfortunately, she passed away. I won't say her name, but we were taking our candidacy exam in this computer lab, and we were all together. And these computers were weird because if you walked away too long, they locked. And then you couldn't unlock them without a special password.
Right.
And so she went to get a coffee. She in the middle of an exam, which was weird because it was like on the other side of campus. And so then she came back, and then she immediately I could hear her like shake the mouse, and then she immediately went to smashing the mouse against the table to the point where she was lifting it up above her head to somehow, like, that is what is going to get a Windows 95 machine to wake up was if you just hit it really hard. And I just was like, I'm just typing. I'm in my Zen moment. You know, it's my own academic career. So what is DJ Hell? What is the opposite of the technology of enchantment then? I just spilled some beer doing that with that camera.
I suppose there's probably two.
No, I'm out of beer.
The first would be the crowd just hating everything, no matter what you play, but not leaving.
If
they leave, at least they're gone, you know. But
at least you don't have to face those eyes.
Yeah, I mean, most DJs, I'd say almost every DJ, is somewhat used to playing to an empty room. Because there's always going to be a situation where you go somewhere and there's going to be nobody there, or you know, nobody's got there yet, or whatever. So that's okay. It's more people standing around being actively annoyed than just not being there. So that would be one, and then the other would probably just be things not working.
You know,
and that's if you're a vinyl DJ, that's the needle skipping. If you're a digital DJ, that's your computer just melting down in the middle of your set, you know, something like that.
What's the worst DJ set imaginable that you could hear as an audience member? Like, you were at the thing, you were at the event in the hall. What would be your audience then member hell?
It's pretty much always train wrecks, which is when two records are playing at the same time, but not on the same beat. It sounds like a train wreck. And, you know, which is, again, part of why I prefer having everything synced up and prefer digital DJing to a lot, because there are a lot of great DJs out there that I know. I'm not, you know, mentioning any names, but there's a lot of DJs that I know that can't necessarily beat match very well, you know, which needs to line the songs up, but have great song selection and have great taste and would be really good if they just could get the songs to line up properly. And there's a little thing called a computer that can help you with that a whole lot. But, you know, some people don't like that. So, kind of taking that out of the equation, solves the most obvious DJ realm, because that's the main thing you're going to notice is if two beats just don't blend together well and they're not going at the same time and they're going in and out of beat and it's bad. It sounds like, you know, it's that feeling you get when you're in between two rooms that are playing different songs and
College dorm life.
Yes,
right. Bad college dorm life, which for me at St. Francis was everybody listening to either Dave Matthews Band or Rusted Root, but putting the CDs on at different times.
Right, exactly.
And so the one would just be 5 minutes before the other one or something, or my room. Oh, this is an episode of Talking Badly About the Dead, or my freshman year roommate who would have sex with his girlfriend in the top bunk while I was not asleep beneath him to Satellite by Dave Matthews Band. That was hell. That was just, I was like, why am I still alive?
Yep.
Why?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, that's pretty terrible. But yeah, no, everybody would just play the same Rusted Root bootleg. Not at the same time though. That was hell. And so on that note, it's now time for the bottom five. Bottom five is a series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. Are you ready?
I think so.
Okay, question one. If reincarnation is real, and you had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease would you be?
Whew.
Like, if you totally, and I don't know if it would be a karmic thing, like, you just totally fucked up, and, like, you're back to single-cell organism or something. Uh-huh. Like, you got to work your way back up to human, or whatever, or, you know, but you had to come back as a disease or illness.
I would have to say, I mean, does it have to be real?
No.
I would probably say, you know, one of the disease type of zombie infections.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Okay.
Because then I could essentially live forever, right? I would just transfer from one and spread everywhere.
Now, would you want to be slow George Romero zombie or fast 28 days later zombie infection?
I think fast 28 days later. I think
zombie. Yeah, those zombies are pretty kick-ass.
More chance of success, which would be my ultimate goal, because I wouldn't want to die.
Yes. And those zombies wouldn't starve to death.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. All right. Question two. Tell me... this is not a question. This is a prompt that is an imperative. Damn it. Tell me a happy but somewhat unremarkable memory of your childhood.
Happy?
Happy but somewhat unremarkable. So no, like, we went to Disney World and I met Mickey shit. It was just one thing that's kind of like, aw. You know, just a normal, banal day that was just kind of like special or still in its own ordinariness.
Hmm. That's tough.
I know.
That's really tough.
I'm glad I'm not you.
Because, yeah, I mean, I want to say the time that I pretended like we got beat up in the alleyway and I had a bloody nose and spit blood all over my friend and a hockey stick so that my mom got freaked out. But that wasn't a normal day. or whenever I finally decided to quit gymnastics, and but that was not a normal day either.
No, it was the end of something.
A normal,
happy, something you feel maybe nostalgic for, something you did once or do, or
I'd say I feel nostalgic for being back when I was in, it's probably middle school. We used to go down to the Pitt quad, and play hacky sack there for hours after school.
Oh, well, that's
was kind of just, you know, we could do that as many times as we wanted. It was always just as much fun, and you know, good clean fun.
Oh, that's a good one. That's perfect. That's a perfect answer. Question three, is there anything in your home that you are afraid of? Is there anything that you have under your roof that you just go, fuck, man, that's gonna kill me one of these days? Or that could hurt me really bad, or just, you know, I should probably get rid of this.
I mean, I have a snake, but it's an albino corn snake.
That's
not poisonous or anything, so...
Yeah, it doesn't constrict.
Right, well, it does constrict, but not enough to constrict me. So.
Oh, okay.
Other people might think to be scared of that, but I'm not. I'd say I have a flat roof, and although it's a new house, the fact that some insurance companies won't provide insurance for me makes me think that it could collapse on me.
Yeah, that would
so
be...
That wouldn't be a good thing.
Well, I mean, you've seen this place. You've been up on the third floor. And I've had at least three people tell me, because my library, for those of you listening at home and not here and have never been to my house, my library with the vast majority of my vinyl, vast majority of my CDs, vast majority of my books is on the third floor. So that's all that kinetic energy stored up. And I've had really smart, sensible people go, wow, I bet your house is strong. It better be, or it's going to collapse on you. And it's a totally, I think, irrational thought. You know, it's an older house. It survived 106-107 years at this point. They say the houses made with older timber are actually stronger, you know, because the wood is older, all of that. But I still have this sometimes, like, irrational fear as I'm lying in bed.
Yeah.
Like, poof, like it could just crush me and I could die.
Well, you know, the there are two other things that are sort of along those irrational fear lines, which are moths and thousand leggers.
Oh, well, you know, thousand leggers are ugly. Moths, I don't know, man, but about you, man. But yeah, those things, those like millipedes and shit. Yeah, that's evil. Silverfish.
Yeah, silver. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Those things are just
disgusting.
Okay. Question four. If you were to murder me right now, how would you dispose of my body? Like, if just as the podcast went bad, I'm just, you know, face down, motionless on the floor.
Hmm.
I got to get out of this somehow.
How would I do it? Do you have a garbage disposal?
No.
No garbage disposal.
No.
Probably.
Got power tools, though.
Well,
Got a reciprocating saw, saw.
You have a lot of stuff in here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of which I imagine would be flammable.
Oh, yeah, well, books,
so
yeah.
So, probably would just burn you.
Oh, okay.
I think that would be the, probably just torch the whole house. But, problem would be then, well, I'd have to take the laptop so yeah. that there was no possible record of me being here, my voice on there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're thinking ahead. Yeah, no, that's true.
Now, yeah, that you'd probably have to take the laptop and the mic just because it's a nice mic.
Oh, okay, well, thank you for complimenting my mic. All right, you ready for the last one?
I think so.
Final bottom five question. Question five. Speaking of technology, actually, if you could unmake any invention, if you could just erase some invention, some piece of technology from human history, human consciousness, what would it be?
Does Nickelback count as an invention?
That's something that could be unmade, yes. I would unmake that, but technology, though.
Okay, technology-wise. Yeah, that's tough, because most technology I like. I'm trying to think of some sort of technological device that I don't like.
Something that harms people, something that annoys people.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the kind of obvious answer is the atomic bomb, you know.
Okay,
Or guns, or something like that. But those all serve a purpose as well, and I don't think we'd quite be where we were without it.
Yeah. Windows 8.
No.
No, you'll find out. You'll find out, my friend.
Yeah, I will, hopefully. I don't know.
Corn cob holders.
I don't eat corn cobs. So.
Oh, okay. There you go. You're safe. I don't know why that just came to mind. Corn cob holders.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Shit.
If I could cue the Price is Right music.
Yeah.
But I can't.
I guess I would have to say.
Or the Jeopardy music. Oh, wait. Copyright. I don't think that was enough. Or even close to being the thing.
I can't think of any technology that I can't think of a good use for.
What about like
about Beta? Betamax.
Oh, Betamax. Well, you know what, though?
Actually, nobody would ever notice, right?
Nobody would ever notice. However, the strange thing is, Betamax, I think, is a great study of accessibility and marketing triumphing over substance. Betamax was
the superior format.
format, but there was nothing to play on it, and so it went away. I have, somewhere in all of this, I do actually have a Betamax tape.
Ooh.
I don't have a Betamax VCR. I have two backup VHS VCRs, because those things are hard to come by now. And I still have a lot of VHS. But yeah, Betamax, though. But that, you're right. But yeah, who would notice?
Right.
It would just be gone.
Yeah, because there's, you know, a lot of other things. One technology will lead to another, and it'll get something good will come from it.
But that was kind of a dead end.
If anything came from Betamax, and you know, you could sort of also say the same thing as about Laserdiscs, but obviously lasers have a you know, a soft spot in my heart.
Soft spot, and I'm sure that somehow in the genesis of Laserdisc led to CD.
Well, right? The interesting thing about Laserdiscs, though, is that they were actually analog.
Really?
They're not digital.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an analog format.
Wow.
And yet
I did not know that. Damn. Yeah.
And they're cool looking. I mean, it looks like a
big silver record or giant killer CD or whatever.
Right.
Or I was the other. You know what the other one I would say is Hell's, I think, official format, the 8-track. The 8-track was evil. Like, the 8-track, they just always broke. And in the middle of your favorite song, there would be... Like, there would be a... Like, you would be aware of the medium. Like, I think that's the thing, like, you think, talk about a record skipping.
Right.
You know, that's if it breaks. Sometimes with 8-tracks, that was just the only way they could fit the song on the album. Was to have the program change in the middle of the song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's evil.
That's pretty bad.
That is pretty bad. All right. I think that's about it. Thank you so much, Mr. Keeves, for doing this. We got to do the rundown again, and this will all be on the website, too. So your hand's in a lot of things. Okay, first there's Laser Crunk, right? Second Fridays of every month at Brillo Box.
Yep.
Right? There's Fuzz, which is the bass and drum night at the Bloomfield Bridge Tavern. That's every single Wednesday.
Yep.
So that's 52 Wednesdays.
It's pretty much, yeah.
Even on Christmas?
We usually skip that one. If it falls on Christmas.
Okay, no Christmas. And you're also in Crow and Baby Jesus.
Right.
So there's you've got a lot going on. And we'll have links to websites for all that stuff. You're also Todd Keebs at KEEBS at Twitter. I'll put a link to your face place, which you use your personal thing.
Yep.
All that good stuff. As for me, our episode will eventually happen, and it will be about something. Our homepage, where you can find new episodes and old episodes, is GonnaDiePodcast.com. We're also on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at GonnaDiePodcast. And We're All Gonna Die on Facebook and Google+. That's a technology that could disappear and nobody might notice.
I like Google+.
I like Google+, too. But what the hell? It's going to be the Betamax of social networks.
I know.
20
I,
years from now, we're like, God, Facebook has enslaved us all. But remember Google+?
I don't use it that much, but I want to because it's nice.
I would if my friends were over there. My friends aren't over there.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks to Brett Zorick, as always, for the lovely theme music, Later Meets.